Some Thoughts on Causation by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. Beginning with the questions of who caused David to take the census and who hardened Pharaoh's heart, we look at the layered nature of causation, which is something like the layers in an onion. We suggest that this sort of layered causation is common in nature. We look at the nature of the author's causation in a novel and suggest that this is analogous to God's activity in history. This has some implications for the problem of evil and for the relationship between God's sovereignty and human responsibility. So, some thoughts on causation by Robert C. Newman. Some puzzling questions. Among the many objections sometimes made against the truth of the Bible are alleged contradictions regarding causation. For example, who caused David to take a census of Israel? Was it Satan, or was it God? Who hardened Pharaoh's heart when Moses was seeking to lead Israel out of slavery? Was it God, or was it Pharaoh himself? Let's take a look at the relevant passages here. David's census, 2 Samuel 24:1. Again, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, "Go and take a census of Israel and Judah." So the king said to Joab and to the army commanders with him, "Go throughout the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and roll the fighting men, so that I may know how many there are." This was something that was forbidden by the law. And notice here, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. He incited David against them, saying, "Go and take a census," etc. In 1 Chronicles 21:1, we have the same incident recorded. It goes this way: Satan rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census of Israel. So David said to Joab and the commanders of the troops, "Go and count the Israelites from Beersheba to Dan, then report back to me so that I may know how many there are." And here we see it. Satan rose up against Israel and incited David to take a census. We'll come back and think about that in a minute. Next, we turn to hardening Pharaoh's heart. In Exodus 8:30, "Then Moses left Pharaoh and prayed to the Lord, and the Lord did what Moses asked. The flies left Pharaoh and his officials and his people. Not a fly remained." So the plague of flies was ended. But this time also, Pharaoh hardened his heart and would not let the people go. This has come up several times already, that Pharaoh hardens his heart, will not let the people go. In Exodus 9:11, "The magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils that were on them and all the Egyptians," another one of the plagues of Egypt. "But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had said to Moses. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Get up early in the morning, confront Pharaoh, and say to him, this is what the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, says, let my people go, so that they may worship me.'" So here, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. So, there we have the situation. My suggestion: so who caused David to take the census of Israel? Was it God or Satan? My suggestion: it was both of them. Who hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let Israel go? God or Pharaoh? It was both of them. This brings us to the idea of layered causation. I suggest that both of these are examples of what we may call layered causation. Consider first the census. Who actually took the census? Did David take the census? Did Joab? Did David's commanders? Did some subordinates? Well, it obviously depends on what you mean by who took the census. David ordered Joab to do so. Joab presumably ordered the commanders. The commanders ordered various subordinates. But down at the bottom of the chain of command, certain subordinates actually took that count, knocked on doors, or whatever was needed for that. So we can say that each of these took the census in the sense of causing it to happen. The cause of the census was layered, something like an onion. Similarly, who caused David to take the census is layered, with both God and Satan being causes at different levels. There's something similar in regard to causation and nature at the level of human, at the levels we humans have investigated so far. Natural phenomena appear to be layered also, with various levels of causation. At the lowest levels, of which we have knowledge, groups of particles we call quarks combine to form neutrons, protons, and some other subatomic particles. In this little diagram in the upper right, we see a neutron made up of an up quark and two down quarks, and charge on them cancels each other out, so it's neutral. Hmm? If we move up to the subatomic level, protons and neutrons combine to form the nuclei of various atomic elements. And here we see a nucleus of one of these elements with three protons and apparently four neutrons. Not sure we can see all of both of them, but something of that sort. So that would be lithium, I guess. Hmm? The competing forces at this level, at the nuclear level, subatomic level, namely the attraction that the strong nuclear force exerts on the various neutrons, protons, etc., and the repulsion that the proton charges have on each other, determine the stability of the various elements, whether they're stable or whether they're subject to radioactive decay. Moving up to the atomic level, the positive electrical charge of the protons and nucleus interact with the negative electrical charges of the electrons outside the nucleus to form a sort of miniature planetary system, which we call an atom. The chemical nature of the various sorts of atoms, hydrogen, oxygen, fluorine, argon, helium, etc., depend on the number of electrons in orbit around the nucleus, and on the way in which the quantum phenomena produce closed shells of electrons. The molecular level, next level up, atoms may combine in multiples of the same or different atoms to form what we call molecules. These contain anywhere from two to thousands of atoms. Here's a picture of a sketch model of the DNA molecule. The properties of these molecules are the result of the combined properties of their atoms, the nature of the interatomic forces holding the molecules together, and even the shapes of the molecules themselves. Moving up to the cellular level, in living things, we find that large aggregations of molecules are combined to form very complex machines we call cells. Here's an example of an E. coli bacteria here. These cells are composed of various components. The eukaryotic cells, which are the more complicated ones, are composed of a nucleus, cell fluid, cell membrane, and various organelles that carry out particular functions for the cell. Move up another level we might call the systemic level. In multicell organisms, the cells are connected in various ways to form systems or organs. Nerve cells are joined to form the nervous system. Here we see a sketch of some nerve cells. Bone cells form bones. Muscle cells form muscles, and so forth. Moving up beyond that to what we might call the organism level, in multicellular plants and animals of the more complex sort, a whole set of systems are organized so as to function as an individual living being. Here's a diagram of a human with some of the different organs shown, taken apart, if you like, outside the body, and then how they would look inside the body. These systems provide means of getting food, eliminating waste, reproducing, growing, movement, protection from predators, and various other sorts of things. Moving up still higher to the social level, for animals and humans in particular, the individual organisms often function together in groups, in families, or in societies. These groups work together to provide nurture and protection for the young, mutual aid, and so forth. So, we think about causation in nature. At each of these levels, there are distinct forms of causation, as well as distinct forms of structure. Thus, we can say if a person writing her name, her mind caused it, her fingers caused it, her muscles caused it, the pen caused it, the ink caused it, and so on and so forth. Even if we stick to the non-living part of nature, we find similar layers of causation. For example, what caused a particular storm to happen? Well, it's caused by a low-pressure system, which was guided by the jet stream to come to where we are, let's say. It was powered by the sun, and so forth. It to a number of other causes that were involved. Turning from nature, let's think about causation in a novel. Consider how causes operate in the work of fictional literature, such as a novel. Inside the novel, we have the sort of causation sketched above in nature to the extent the novelist wishes to represent it, as they usually don't. But we have an additional level, we might say outside or above the novel, the creativity of the novelist in selecting plots, creating events, developing characters, and so forth. As a theist and a Christian, I believe that our real world is somewhat parallel to that of a novel. Our world has an author, God, who, like a novelist, may interact at any level with his world that he's created, providing causes in addition to those which he has created to operate naturally in our world. And so these additional interactions we might call miracles, but some of them might be hidden providential or something of that sort. We suggest from a Christian perspective as well another invisible level. In addition to the levels that we know about from science, there's an invisible level of causation above that of humans, but not so ultimate as that of God's level. This is the level at which Satan and the angels operate. It is seen most clearly in Bible passages such as Job chapters 1 and 2, and Daniel chapters 3, 5, 6, 10, and 12. This sort of model seems to me to provide help in understanding some matters that Christians have debated for centuries. For instance, it seems to me to help with the matter of God's sovereignty and human responsibility. God has, so to speak, written a novel so that whatever happens is ordained by him. But inside the novel, each actor is morally responsible for his or her thoughts and actions. Similarly, I think it gives us insight into the problem of God and evil. God's relationship to evil is like that of a good novelist to his or her evil characters. J.R.R. Tolkien is not to be thought of as approving of the character and deeds of the evil characters in his Lords of the Rings. So he doesn't approve of the character and deeds of Sauron, or Gollum, or Saruman, and so neither does God. So God has written history to include evil, and to show us what evil is like, and the consequences of choosing evil rather than good. God is not the author of evil in the sense that theologians use this phrase, but he is the author of the story of salvation history, which includes the thoughts and actions of evil beings. So there's my attempt to deal with some problem areas that I think this sort of layered view of causation and the sort of analogy with a novel provide, that God can both be in the story, as we see God becoming a human and entering into his story, if you like, but God can also be above the story in the sense that he has selected everything that's going to happen, including the evil actions of evil individuals, without God himself being evil. Some applications I suggest here. We should not try to use the truths of God's ordination or of Satan's devices to relieve ourselves of our responsibility for our thoughts and actions. God is going to bring every person into judgment regarding their thoughts and actions. And it's very important that we realize that and realize that we cannot possibly stand in such a judgment except that we've cast ourselves upon God for mercy and are trusting in what his son Jesus has done to provide our righteousness and pay for our sins. Another application, we can trust God that he is indeed working all things together for good for those who love him, that he's in control of the novel, we might say, and he is good, and he has in fact promised us that he's working all things together for good to those that love him. So our concern must be to examine our own hearts and to see whether indeed we do love God or not. And if we find that we're having trouble loving God, we need to flee to him and ask him to change us. Lastly, we should labor diligently to do the task God has set before us, trusting Him with the results. God wants us to put forth the effort. He has not designed a novel in which we sit around doing nothing, but He has designed one in which, if we want to be, you might say, good characters in that novel, then we need to have good attitudes, good thoughts, and good actions. Well, that's a little quick sketch here. This is the end of our discussion, but thinking of history as God's great humongous novel that puts even War and Peace in the shade for its size. Thank you very much for your attention.